Hey, welcome to Crossroads. The Chinese economy has reached a breaking point. Trade wars, splitting global alliances, internal instability, all of this is looking to make the problems even worse. And now attention is shifting to a top meeting right now taking place among the heads of the Chinese Communist Party. This is their third plenum from July 15th to July 18th, and it's going to look to establish the future economic direction of the regime. Now, I want to go deeper into this because this actually impacts not just the direction of, again, the Chinese economy, but the nature of what it's doing. And based on the information I'm seeing, it looks like they're going to try to revive Mao-era type policies. Let me show you what's happening on the surface first. So The Guardian says China's President Xi Jinping will oversee the ruling Communist Party's secretive third plenum. They don't make it public, it's secret, which usually takes place every 5 years in October, though Beijing has offered few hints about what might be on the table. It says state media in June said the delayed four-day gathering would primarily examine issues related to further comprehensively deepening reform and advanced Chinese modernization. And Xi Jinping has said the party is planning, quote, major reforms. Now, look, the meeting is behind closed doors. We will not actually know what they say behind those closed doors. But what we're going to get is when they finish and they come out and give the announcement, we'll get an idea after again when they announce the surface narratives for the new economic policy. And there's been a lot of chatter so far about, what's really going to happen with it and whether they're going to make any real changes that could actually fix things, which again has gotten the whole breadth of stances on the CCP, depending on which media you're reading. A lot of the news has touted ideas on what the CCP could do to try to save parts of its economy. But many of them also note in the same breath that, in clear-headed terms, frankly, that the CCP would probably not adopt these ideas. The reality that many are seeing right now is that the Chinese Communist Party has actually already announced some of its new trade policies. It's looking at a type of, quote-unquote, self-reliance, things heading in the direction of separation from the West, the United States and Western Europe, and the free world as a whole, and they're turning instead to try to deepen trade among partner nations with a new type of global alliance, right? Eurasian countries, a lot of the Muslim world, of course, Russia and Iran and these types of countries. Now, personally, I'd say the factor that needs to be taken into account is this. The Chinese Communist Party has been moving away from the so-called reform and opening up policies that marked its move to the global market. Now, brief history on this. What happened? China, of course, under the Communist Party, used to be under Mao Zedong. He, of course, led a lot of the communist revolutionary policies, established what has become the Chinese Communist Party we know today to an extent. And, of course, the ideas of Maoism and global revolution, and the whole using of the minorities to spark, social movements and so on, Maoism. Under Mao Zedong, the Chinese Communist Party had a system where the government controlled everything more directly. The farms, the businesses, they were under the military. When they decided to change this, it was at a time when the Soviet Union was collapsing, around the time of the late 80s, right? 89 and the early 90s. And what happened essentially was this: the Berlin Wall fell. There were political movements in China where people were demanding democracy. Students gathered on the streets in Beijing demanding that they follow the same changes happening in the Soviet Union. And then the CCP massacred them. They slaughtered them. That was the Tiananmen Square massacre. And after that, then they realized, hey, it was bad PR for the whole world. The CCP was getting a bad image. They decided to change things, to adapt the Chinese Communist Party to the changes taking place in the whole kind of global environment and the way that communism was essentially forced to defend itself. People wanted democracy, people wanted the free market, and the, again, communist bloc fell apart. As a way of saving itself, the CCP did what they called reform and opening up. They kept the Communist Party, they kept a lot of the same communist principles, but they adopted the free market. And that was under Deng Xiaoping. He was the communist leader after Mao Zedong. And Deng Xiaoping had many statements, such as, hide your strength and bide your time. Meaning, you know, they're still communist, they still have the same goals, but they're going to hide their strength and just wait. And what the CCP did in the meantime was got trade deals with the whole world. They got most favored nation trading status from the United States. They're given access to the World Trade Organization. They got trade benefits left and right, because in America, they were thinking, make China less communist by making them more capitalist. It's a simple plan. But behind the scenes, what the CCP did was, rather than having businesses under the control of the military, they just created corporations and made the Chinese Communist Party the majority shareholder in the businesses. They integrated the communist system into the free market principles. And as time has gone on, through subsidies and, you know, kind of malicious trade practices, let's say, whether it's currency manipulation or whether it's, you know, economic theft through the form of cyber attacks, the CCP has used the markets to not only maintain power within China, but to even subjugate a lot of the rest of the world. Things like, again, the debt traps of the One Belt, One Road initiative. Things like, for example, currency manipulation impacting the U.S., getting American investment firms to even put pensions of American government workers into the Chinese economy. Things like this have allowed the CCP to grow and to gain power. What is now happening, though, is that these policies have reached the dead end. The Chinese Communist Party is seemingly understanding this. And given the current circumstance where the CCP is getting sidelined by, again, the free world yet again, because, you know, it's backing Russia and it's getting more aggressive on the world stage, other countries are starting to realize that the Communist Party is still the Communist Party. The CCP of Mao is the CCP of today. And Xi Jinping is, of course, reviving a lot of the communist policies that we saw under Mao Zedong, the purges, the types of reforms taking place within the party itself, consolidation of power. And we're looking like now they're going to bring that type of policy into the economic sphere. That's what's now taking place. Again, you know, the new global alliances and agreements being formed look more like the trade agreements that the Chinese Communist Party had during the Cold War. You know, the days of the old Sino-Soviet alliance. And with the CCP right now facing growing pressure from the free world, you know, including the United States and NATO allies, now saying that the Chinese Communist Party is going to face additional trade punishments because it's enabling Russia's war in Ukraine, and they're seeing that, you know, the CCP is what is allowing it to happen, enabling the war. The only way to stop it is to go after the CCP and their money, notably. Every sign points to the policies in the CCP and its economy getting worse, not better. And even without the whole Cold War, you know, part two possibility, the economic problems the CCP is facing, regardless, they're really serious. They're not easy to fix without some really extreme measures that would have ripple effects elsewhere. And the regime seems to know this. Now, for the CCP, this big meeting they're having right now could represent a pivotal shift. I'd say the chatter from inside China hints at this. This is the East Asia Forum and what they're saying. They say nearly 46 years ago, the third plenum of the 11th Party Congress in China, of course, in December of 1978, decided to undertake China's economic reform. Since then, some of the past eight third plenum has maintained the tradition of focusing on economic reform. China's Politburo meeting on 30 April suggests that the key theme of the upcoming plenum, the one happening right now, include deepening comprehensive reforms and modernization. It set out a policy report, approach of running toward the problem and focusing on correcting it instead of adopting a grand-scale liberalization policy. The plenum is more likely to announce policy measures to overcome some of the specific bottlenecks to sustainable growth. And I'll explain what this means in a moment. But they also add this. They say the biggest factor in China's economic success during the past decades, again, under the Deng Xiaoping shift, was its transition from a centrally planned system, communist-type economics, to a market economy, capitalism, while maintaining the communist rule, of course. It says it also benefited greatly from conditions such as its low labor cost advantage, its demographic dividend, and open international trade and investment regimes. Over the past 15 years or so, these economic conditions have changed drastically. In other words, those changes that worked then, they're now saying they don't work for China under the Communist Party, meaning they have to change them to do something different. And they add that noteworthy among these changes are the aging of the population and the setback of globalization, because the CCP wants that, of course. It says the plenum is likely to adopt policies that attempt to share more of the fruits of economic development with the Chinese populace. One area of reform is the possible easing of official urban residency for migrant workers. Some market participants might feel disappointed that the plenum will not announce a bold liberalization program. They're moving away from liberalization, in other words. And remember, you know, in communist speak, when they talk about democracy and they talk about republics and the free world, they call it the liberal democratic world order. And so moving away from liberalization in their concepts means moving back to a more hardline type system of communism. So, like, in other words, we can expect the CCP to roll back some of those economic reforms that we saw under Deng Xiaoping. Again, as they note, started in the late 70s and really kind of finalized in the early 90s. And again, that moved China out of the Mao era and rolled its economy onto the world stage. And really what's happening now, instead of that, we should expect the Chinese Communist Party to go back to more Mao-era policies, you know, hardline communist policies. Or some analysts are framing it to share more of the fruits of economic development with the Chinese people. Because remember, that's the narrative of communism. Communism has almost always ran on the line of seizing things from the so-called, you know, wealthy and otherwise, and giving it back to the people. And the CCP is now using that same concept where they're saying they need to share the fruits of economic development with the people. Again, it's the same basic narrative. It's just being framed a bit differently. Now, I'll be talking more about this after we get back from a quick break.
Experts agree one of the best ways to protect against financial uncertainty is to diversify your portfolio. Learn how physical gold and silver can secure your retirement funds from today's economic challenges with a gold IRA from American Hartford Gold. You can safeguard your wealth with no penalties or taxes when you transfer your current qualifying retirement accounts. Call now and our precious metals specialists will send you a free information kit, no cost or obligation. American Hartford Gold, a trusted industry leader with an A-plus from the Better Business Bureau, has a 5-star rating from thousands of happy clients. Whether you are getting physical precious metals in a gold IRA or delivered to your doorstep, we offer only the highest quality gold and silver. For your peace of mind, we also offer a no-fee buyback commitment, a low-price guarantee, along with free shipping and free insurance. So don't wait. Call the number on your screen today and secure your financial future.
Welcome back. Is the collapse of the Chinese Communist Party inevitable? Well, the Chinese Communist Party is in a very delicate position right now. There are a lot of problems the regime is facing. You know, the CCP's military ambitions in the South China Sea, its new so-called security operations that it's going to be holding with different countries, the military pushback from NATO right now, the growing internal instability, new pushes for purges within the political system, the communist revival, where Xi is, again, trying to create this new form of communism under Xi Jinping thought, getting rid of Maoism, notably, and moving towards what's going to be like a Xi Jinpingism. And of course, you know, economic instability, coupled with outside trade wars that are expected to expand even further. And so the CCP, economically, they don't have a lot of ways out. Now, on the economy, the problems are also multifaceted and very hard to fix. Any change is going to come at the cost of another issue. And even then may not be enough to actually fix things enough to bounce back. The problem with the whole self-reliance policy the CCP is rolling out right now, because that's what it's saying, you know, internally right now, the shift they're doing under Xi Jinping thought is they want to have the Chinese Communist Party able to manufacture things and produce things for the domestic market. They don't need the outside world. They don't need Western chips. They don't need the Western market. They're willing to cut themselves off. but they have some real problems with that because that policy is already failing. The Communist Party's heavy reliance on real estate, because about a third of their economy used to be in real estate, that reached the limits of its bubble because the CCP was just taking out bank loans, funding mega projects to build infrastructure, and they built so much of it nobody could use it. That created a huge bubble. And not only did it create a bubble within the markets, it's even now causing chaos in the banking and loan system because they're not paying off the loans. That is reaching a crisis. On the CCP's other big policy, manufacturing, about another third of their economy, that has also reached the limits of its bubble. Because look, under the old policies, what the CCP did, it became the manufacturing hub of the world. It was cheap manufacturing. You could get your stuff made cheaper in China. Its focus was on mass production, and that was meant for the global economy. That was anticipating to be exported into every country on the face of the earth. The CCP is now losing that global economy. They're now losing the factories. They're seeing companies, de-risking and pulling out of China. They're seeing investment leave. They're seeing other countries saying it's too dangerous, too risky, and not economically useful enough to try to take that risk. They don't want to do it. Now, that has had major problems as well, because while the CCP is still manufacturing all the products and still manufacturing all these goods with the anticipation of exporting them, they have a surplus. And what's happening right now is that the Chinese people are not buying it. The rest of the world isn't buying it so much. And so they have goods just building up. It's so much so that it's trying to dump these goods now in other countries at a cheaper price, just trying to do fire sale prices. And the governments of other countries, including the United States, including countries in the European Union, they're starting to block those dumping, activities with anti-dumping measures, as they call them. So the Chinese Communist Party, really what's happening now is they're left with third world trading partners who actually compete with the CCP for cheap manufacturing in some instances. And also with the new focus on domestic markets at a time, notably, when the Chinese people don't seem interested in buying. The Chinese people are not consuming at the rate the CCP would need them to sustain this new model. In other words, the CCP's economy looks like it's reached its dead end. It can't move anymore. It seems like CCP leaders are already hinting at this, actually. They're preparing not just the Chinese people, but also Western investors for what is very likely going to come from this current meeting happening right now as we speak. Financial Times said this: in the past, the Chinese Communist Party has issued the third plenary session of its Central Committee, its elite leadership body, to address the most important economic issues of the day. In 1978, Deng Xiaoping used the meeting to launch China's post-Mao Zedong era reform and opening up drive. And as some experts argue, similarly bold action is needed now to kickstart domestic demand and prevent the world's second biggest economy from falling into a deflationary spiral. But it says that at a recent World Economic Forum event known as the Summer Davos in the northeastern seaside city of Dalian in China, by the way, Premier Li Qiang, again one of the CCP leaders, signaled that no shock therapy would be forthcoming. They can't revive it. It says, in the wake of the pandemic, China's economy was like a patient recovering from a serious illness, Li said. And he said, quote, according to Chinese medical theory, at this time, we cannot use strong medicine. We should precisely adjust and slowly nurture the economy, allowing the body to gradually recover. They're not going to fix it quick. Now, like another key issue being raised right now is the struggles within the Communist Party itself. And the basic point that even if the CCP releases some of these lofty plans, right, it may not actually work to fix things. They're acknowledging this is going to be a long road if it can even fix things in the first place. The focus is survival of the party. Reuters said this: China's leaders will seek to inject confidence in the economy at a highly anticipated meeting next week, this week. But conflicting goals such as boosting growth while cutting debt may mean little progress toward implementing change. They note that further in, China's leaders have not shown how they can cut debt and stimulate growth, get consumers to spend more while channeling resources to producers and infrastructure, or increase urbanization while revitalizing urban areas. And they say that as a result, the communique at the end of the closed-door meeting chaired by President Xi Jinping may contain lofty goals, but offer few pathways to them, because they don't have a lot of options, frankly. They say this could disappoint these financial markets and global officials calling for China to change its growth model. And again, briefly on this, why are they not changing the growth model? It's because some of the changes being recommended would mean damaging the Communist Party. The focus for the CCP is always survival of the party, maintaining as well the Marxist-Leninist system. And so if they were to drop that, get rid of Marxism, get rid of communism, it would mean the CCP had changed in nature, and they will not do that. They're doing the opposite again. They're going back to the drawing book. They're going back to Marxism directly, and they're combining it with Xi Jinping thought. The survival of the party is the priority, not, you know, an economic bounce back. They want to save the party. The reality is the CCP has already been trying to save its economy. All the different things people are proposing, they've been trying some of them. The solutions are not working. There are several issues going on at the same time. Each of these individually would represent a significant crisis. And the problem is the CCP has turned to shortcuts, scams, and state tyranny as a way of doing business for too long. And it's finally catching up with it, all these things it's been doing. Now, like the Wall Street Journal just recently pointed to something I've been mentioning as well. The banking crisis in China happening right now, it's taking place on the backs of debt from the regime's old methods of using mega projects to artificially stimulate its economy. Here's the headline. Wall Street Journal, they say trillions in hidden debt drove China's growth. Now it threatens its future. Because again, they were taking out bank loans and they were doing mega projects to create artificial growth on the back of debt. And now that debt is coming back to bite them. They say further in, local governments racked up as much as $11 trillion in off-the-books debt to build industrial districts, resorts, transit systems, and housing projects, including many that failed. You might have seen some of the propaganda videos of YouTube influencers going to China and riding the high-speed trail and the train and so on. It's propaganda. These things have failed. That is the reason. The CCP built things it can't afford. It built things people don't even use in many instances. And all of that debt is the big bubble coming back to bite them right now. Now, look, to tackle these problems, the CCP is turning again to state interventionism. They're not looking to the free market. They're not looking to change the nature of the CCP. They're looking to a communist solution, state interventionism. Financial Times said that on Friday, the central bank said that it had struck deals with several institutions to borrow several hundred billion renminbi of long-dated bonds that it can sell into the market to try to satisfy demand. It says that the PBOC said it would continue to borrow and sell the bonds on an open-ended and unsecured basis. Now, the Epoch Times notes that the CCP's banking system is turning to another old policy, deprecating its currency. It says that against a backdrop of a strengthening U.S. dollar and a continuous decline in the Chinese yuan's exchange against the dollar, China's central bank, the People's Bank of China, PBOC, has implemented a policy of gradual yuan depreciation, drawing significant attention. They're devaluing their currency. It says since the beginning of the year, the yuan has deprecated by 2.1% against the dollar. And again, based on the numbers the CCP gives us, you can't even trust those. It's probably worse oftentimes. And it's further in to prevent the yuan from depreciating too quickly and to maintain a relatively stable exchange rate. Several major state-owned Chinese banks have recently been buying the U.S. dollar in the offshore market and selling it in the spot market. Global financial market has taken notice of this gradual depreciation policy. Now look, this is also happening as the CCP has launched a large-scale censorship campaign, making sure that foreign investors, foreign influencers, foreign governments, They're not able to actually know the state of the CCP's economy. If you say otherwise in China, if you're a journalist there, if you're a, you know, someone working in a financial firm, and you say something that contradicts the CCP's economic claims, they will throw you in prison, and they've been doing it. And so you can't actually talk about the true state of the Chinese economy. You can't talk about the true state of whether their GDP growth is what they say it is. And because of that, you can't actually prove that their currency is even worth what they claim it's worth. And because of that, you know, you can't adjust the value of the Chinese currency accordingly as they're using that currency to go and buy up U.S. dollars, impacting our currency. They're using their black box currency to buy dollars, which is affecting us. Then there's the other problem. The challenges they're facing are so intertwined that trying to fix one part is going to have a ripple effect. It's going to affect other parts. Take, for example, the CCP's plan to accelerate manufacturing, right? They wanted to get into advanced manufacturing. Bloomberg said this: China's plan to save the economy comes at a cost to factories. Using state power to accelerate advanced manufacturing has left even cutting-edge sectors struggling with excess supply. And I'll explain why this is. But they say that the excess has left companies like one of these ones, Huan Energy, battling to capitalize on Beijing's attention while seeking to avoid becoming a casualty of Xi Jinping's new productive forces drive. That's the name they have for it, new productive forces. They know it's a twist on an old Marxist concept of productive forces. The campaign in practice entails using state power to accelerate everything from nuclear energy to electric vehicle output with the aim of helping fire up tech advances, productivity gains, and ultimately economic growth, they hope. They say it's likely to make a fresh appearance at next week's policy gathering in Beijing, the one, again, happening as we speak. Now, look, the problem with the CCP, right, with this policy, to an extent right now, it's being denied access to advanced manufacturing. They're not able to get a lot of the parts they need to get into the high-tech market. And when the CCP tries to put a focus on one issue, you know, they say, hey, we want to manufacture electric vehicles. We want to manufacture solar panels. They have, of course, Project 863 before and now China 2025 currently, which set economic policies that focused on certain areas: high-tech economies, new materials, medical devices, EVs, solar panels, you know, artificial intelligence, that type of stuff. What happened, though, is because the CCP in its five-year plans and sometimes even longer-term plans sets goals on specific companies and specific industries. What happens is that in China, all the companies try to focus on those few industries. They get all their might and they just go towards these one little ones that are being propped up and subsidized because they want that money. And so what happens when a huge portion of the base of a country's industry focuses on just a few products? Well, it leads to overcapacity. And then what happens if that industry gets hit with trade sanctions or tariffs, as they are now? Or if other problems take place? Well, then the CCP faces that old quip of why you don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, look at what's happening right now with the electric vehicles market in China, right? The current trade war over solar panels and wind turbines, look at what's happening with those. Other countries are putting in place policies to restrict Chinese exports. They don't want them in their countries. They don't want them getting dumped there. And they're also getting hit with restrictions on other types of, you know, high-tech components, like semiconductors in some areas. The Chinese high-tech market is getting strangled out because they can't compete on a lot of these things, like high-tech chips, for example, which they need to break through in that market. And even what they have developed domestically, other countries are again rejecting them because they don't want the CCP dumping excess goods onto their markets, which would in turn destabilize the economies of other countries. Now, the reality is you cannot manufacture too much of the same thing. That's basic, you know, free market principles. But that's what's happening when you try to control everything from the top using socialist state interventionism. Basic, you know, economics, again, the problem of state interventionism. You prioritize one thing, you're going to have too much of it. If you subsidize one thing, you're going to have too much of it and not enough of something else. the natural needs of the free market were not taken into account. And what happens then is what's happening now with the CCP, frankly. You wind up with too much of one thing and not enough of other thing. And again, add to this the CCP's military threats. It's saying it's going to invade Taiwan. What happens then to the Chinese economy? What happens with its relations, not only with the US and the free world, but also its Asia-Pacific neighbors? What happens then? What happens with the trade backlash that's very likely going to see in response from NATO because it's been deemed now the enabler of Russia's war in Ukraine? And the growing CCP's belligerence on the world stage overall, notably, where it's doubling down on that type of hardline policy. Other countries are starting to see the Chinese Communist Party as a threat. And, you know, the simple solution to dealing with that threat is to hit it where it hurts, you know, right in the old economy. Now, given all these points, the trade wars on the horizon, the overcapacity for manufacturing, the fact, frankly, that the attempts the CCP has already tried to fix its economy are not working, the current third plenum meetings happening right now are very likely to take all these things into account. And again, what will very likely be, you know, happening is something outside the so-called strong medicine. They can't revive the patient. The priority of the CCP is always self-preservation. The priority is always survival of the party. They will do anything if it means saving the party from destruction. And if that means rolling the country back, rolling back the clock, back to the times before Deng Xiaoping and the reforms and opening up, well, that's exactly what they'll do. Well, everyone, that's all for today. Thank you for joining us. Let me know what you think in the comments, and please share this video. Help us get the word out. That said, thank you as always. Thank you for being here. And as always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.